Brian Lehrer on WNYC. On yesterday's show, we talked briefly about the influence of the free market novelist Ayn Rand on Paul Ryan, as proclaimed by Ryan in this speech to Rand devotees in 2005.
The reason I got involved in public service, by and large, if I had to credit one thinker, one person, it would be Ayn Rand. And the fight we are in here, make no mistake about it, is a fight of individualism versus collectivism. In almost every fight we are involved in here on Capitol Hill, whether it's an amendment vote that I'll take later on this afternoon or a big piece of policy we're putting through our Ways and Means Committee, it is a fight that usually comes down to one conflict, individualism versus collectivism.
So that was Paul Ryan in 2005. Coming up, we'll play another clip of Ryan lauding Rand from 2009 at the height of the financial crisis. But that's not all we'll do. Since most people have not studied Ayn Rand or read her novels like The Fountainhead and Atlas Shrugged, we know many of you have, but many of you haven't, we'll dig deeper now on the philosophy of Rand herself and how she has influenced the American right. Here is Ayn Rand on CBS in 1959.
Let me put it briefly. I'm for the separation of state and economics. Just as we had separation of state and church, which led to peaceful coexistence among different religions after a period of religious wars, so the same applies to economics. If you separate the government from economics, if you do not regulate production and trade, you will have peaceful cooperation and harmony and justice among men.
Ayn Rand on CBS in 1959. That's from an interview with Mike Wallace. We'll play a longer excerpt of the interview coming up. With me now is Jennifer Burns, University of Virginia history professor and author of a 2009 biography called Goddess of the Market, Ayn Rand and the American Right. Professor Burns, welcome to WNYC.
Thank you so much for having me.
And to begin with a clip we just played, that's quite a utopian view, that with no regulation of industry or production or the marketplace, harmony and justice will prevail throughout the land. How far did she take that idea?
She took it pretty far. She proposed a very limited role for government, in which government would not intervene in economic matters other than to ensure the sanctity of contracts. So it would run a legal system. It would punish lawbreakers who, injured other people or stole property. But, it would not oversee environmental regulations, safety regulations. Those types of things would be taken care of by the market, by the forces of supply and demand, and customers rewarding or punishing businesses that didn't follow acceptable practices.
I see that our lines are filling up, by the way, without any urging whatsoever. So if you want to talk about or ask about Ayn Rand, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, or post to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show. As we could hear in her voice, she is Russian. Would you say that her worldview was shaped by how she and her family had suffered under the most suffocating of what the Soviet Union had to offer in the early 20th century?
Yeah, that was really a definitive event for her. She was about 12 years old when her family's property was seized by the communist revolutionaries, and she watched a once prosperous city decline into abject poverty. And so when she saw government growth in the United States, she couldn't help but connect it to what she had gone through in Russia. So government programs that looked innocuous or harmless to people in the United States, she thought, this is just the slippery slope that's going to lead inevitably to the type of totalitarian state that she had escaped from early in her life. So that became a kind of basic template through which she viewed government action the rest of her life.
So let's play another clip. This one's a little bit longer. It's about 2 minutes of an exchange between Mike Wallace on CBS in 1959 and Ayn Rand, who he was interviewing. Dwight Eisenhower was president, and Rand asserts that both major parties in the U.S. are socialists, putting America on the road to ruin by considering themselves their brother's keeper. And Wallace asks,
yes, but how can you expect to reverse this trend when, as we've said, the country is run by majority rule through ballot, and that majority seems to prefer to vote for this modified welfare state?
Oh, I don't believe that. You know as well as I do that the majority today has no choice.
What do you mean?
The majority has never been offered a choice between controls and freedom.
How do you account for the fact that an almost overwhelming majority of the people who are regarded as our leading intellectuals and our leading industrialists, the men whom you seem to admire the most, the men with the muscle and the money, favor the modified capitalism that we have today?
Because it is an intellectual issue. Since they all believe in collectivism, they do favor it. But the majority of the people has never been given a choice. You know that both parties today are for socialism, in effect, for controls, and there is no party. There are no voices to offer an actual pro-capitalist, laissez-faire, economic freedom and individualism. That is what this country needs today.
Isn't it possible that we all believe in it because we are all basically lonely people and we all understand that we are basically our brother's keepers?
You couldn't say that you really understand it because there is no way in which you could justify it. Nobody has ever given a reason why men should be their brother's keepers, and you've had every example, and you see the examples around you of men perishing by the attempt to be their brother's keepers.
You have no faith in anything.
Faith?
Only in your mind.
That is not faith. That is a conviction.
That is not faith. That is a conviction. Her own mind. Ayn Rand with Mike Wallace in 1959 from a CBS interview series called Colorful People, years before 60 Minutes. My guest is biographer Jennifer Burns, author of Goddess of the Market, Ayn Rand and the American Right. So, Jennifer, this is before Lyndon Johnson's war on poverty, before Medicaid or Medicare were even enacted. General Eisenhower is president with Cold Warriors Kennedy and Nixon running to succeed him. What was the context of her conclusion in 1959 that we were living in such a socialist country?
Well, I think it goes back to the New Deal, which grew up around Rand when she'd been in the country for about 10 years. And so she looked at the New Deal as that first step on the slippery slope to socialism. And when Dwight Eisenhower and the Republicans came into power in the 1950s and by and large made their peace with the New Deal, didn't try to repeal or revoke a lot of the social programs that Roosevelt had passed, that's why she felt there was no choice, that the consensus had developed around the expanded welfare state. And there really wasn't an option in the political realm to choose anything but that. So it's a really interesting to see that even before the government expansion of the Great Society, she was already pinpointing the New Deal as a sort of origin point of where things went wrong in the United States.
Did she have a base of admiring Republican politicians then, as she has Paul Ryan and others publicly espousing her views today?
No, it's very interesting. In the 1950s, she was sort of a lightning rod for conservatives because she was a very strong atheist. She did not believe in God, and she was very open about this and very outspoken. And the 1950s was sort of that moment of high struggle against godless communism, and there were so many affirmations of the importance of religion to American life that she didn't really fit in a movement that saw itself as religiously influenced and opposed to an atheistic communist threat. So she was very controversial for that reason. Now, she still is controversial today because of her religious beliefs, but over time, those have come to seem less central to her identity and allowed politicians like Ryan to say, you know, I'm both a Catholic and a believer in the ideas of Ayn Rand.
One of the ways that people interpret Rand is to say she believed that the rich are literally more moral than the poor. Would you describe her beliefs that way?
She really talked about a distinction between people she called producers and looters or moochers. So a producer could be anybody who was self-sufficient or independent or responsible for their own lives. In her fiction, she dramatized that through wealthy people, absolutely, and she celebrated industrialists, captains of industry, people like this. She did try to say that you could be an artist or even a bus driver or some type of manual worker, and as long as you did not depend on the charity of others, you were a producer who was contributing to society. But in her novel, she tended to code that as rich versus not so rich.
Huh. So in the novels, was it it wasn't simply that the rich are more moral than the non-working idle. It could have even been that the rich were more moral than ordinary workers who were cutting the rich's grass and serving their food and nannying their children.
It could have been, but it had less to do with, you know, material gain than the type of work you did. And the way you led your life. So the hero of her first novel, Howard Rourke, is a very unsuccessful architect. But he's the epitome of the moral man for Ayn Rand because he doesn't compromise. He doesn't change his views for other people. He's pure to his own vision. So even though he's living in poverty, he's an example of a moral life. Now, by the end of the novel, he becomes financially successful. But the point is not his success. The point is his sort of integrity. Now, that's the Fountainhead. Atlas Shrugged, you tend to see more emphasis on the moral being the brilliant inventors and business people, although she always includes a few of the sort of so-called ordinary American in that circle of the good and the true to show that this is an ideal that is open to everybody.
We're talking with University of Virginia history professor Jennifer Burns, author of a biography of Ayn Rand called Goddess of the Market, Ayn Rand and the American Right. We'll play another clip in a few minutes of Paul Ryan singing the praises of Ayn Rand from 2009 at the height of the fiscal crisis. But we have a very full board of calls. Are you surprised?
Not at all.
People want to talk about or ask about Ayn Rand and her influence on the American right. And Tim in Baldwin, you're on WNYC. Hello, Tim.
Hello, Brian. Yeah, I just wish that people who read Ayn Rand or like what she says ought to read Sinclair Lewis alongside of it, because it's the position that the experience from the opposite side of what unbridled capitalism can mean for the poor and the immigrant. I mean, she was lucky to become have the talent she had and the abilities that she had, and she brought into this country. But most people don't come with that that range of gifts that enable them to have phenomenal success in a very short period of time. I mean, much more common would be the generation that labors at taxi driving or in the stockyard, as Sinclair Lewis pointed out, than the ones who just simply can rocket to the top of our society.
Tim, thank you. Well, Jennifer, as a biographer of Ayn Rand, do you know if she did read Sinclair Lewis in her time, and if she had, how did she respond or describe or interpret the excesses of the pre-progressive era before Teddy Roosevelt, when the industrial era was producing such disparities and such miserable working conditions?
You know, she tended to kind of make two arguments. One would be that those were exaggerations. So, in other words, it was, you know, the horror of child labor or industrial work was overly exaggerated. Or then to draw a historical comparison and say, this is actually an improvement over being a serf in a feudal system or being impoverished, and then saying, you know, if it was so bad, why were people still coming to America? Why did they want to have these jobs? So she tended to think of that as a historical evolution that was part of the process by which capitalism made people richer and more prosperous, even though it had some black marks against it. But she really wouldn't focus on those or admit those. Instead, she would talk about how this was really progress when you consider the broader sweep of history.
John in Harrington Park, you're on WNYC. Hi, John.
How are you?
Okay. Off the speakerphone, okay?
I'm off it now, sorry.
Good. That's okay. Thanks.
Okay. I've read The Fountainhead twice. I teach The Fountainhead to AP English seniors. I'd like to just take this opportunity to call out so many modern Republicans who preach Ayn Rand, but they don't practice Ayn Rand. And as a younger man, I naturally lean more left. As I've grown older, I want to lean right, but I just see all these phonies out there who, while they preach, as you just had a clip from Governor Christie doing, a smaller government, they actually create a larger government. And in education, you see the state more and more in the hand of the classroom, which is completely contradictory to what Ayn Rand would preach. In New York, you see Mayor Bloomberg, a Republican mayor, he's dictating what people can drink. It's getting ridiculous, and I just see more the control, not coming from the left, but coming from the right.
What do you think about that, Professor, since your book is about Ayn Rand and the American right?
Yeah, I think the caller makes an excellent point. Ayn Rand had views that, you know, we might think of as analogous to Ron Paul in terms of criticizing a lot of conservative interest in regulating the sort of personal lives or moral lives of people. So she was really an anti-government purist. And some modern Republicans have taken part of those ideas and applied them to things like business regulation and taxation. But there's also, over time, become an alliance between the more libertarian parts of the Republican Party and the more socially conservative parts of the Republican Party. And some of those social conservative parts do lead to more controls on education, on health and safety, things like that. So, you know, Rand has been taken up by the modern Republican Party, but they've used her very selectively. And as we heard in that Mike Wallace interview, she didn't really fit into the two-party system very easily, and she still doesn't fit there very well today.
In fact, she rejects, and her disciples today reject the word libertarian, as Ron Paul embraces. And Ron Paul's son, Senator Rand Paul, was he named after Ayn Rand, by the way?
He's not. That's an urban legend. His full name is Randall, which was abbreviated to Rand. But he and his father have both. I don't think he minds that people think he might be named after Ayn Rand.
Interesting.
But, yeah, Rand would say, we are radicals for capitalism. So we are not conservatives. And the Libertarian Party, when it emerged, was full of people who adored Ayn Rand, and she absolutely hated them. She said, you're plagiarizing my ideas. You don't fully get what I'm about. She called them scum, you know, and some of this was Rand's personality and her temperament. By the end of her life, she had grown very impatient with people who claimed to be followers of her ideas, and she had very specific ideas about what she meant and how you could use her work.
Well,
and so she,
go ahead.
She just became very, very temperamental in the last decades of her life, so you find a lot of her criticizing the people who seem to be her greatest supporters.
We'll continue in a minute with Jennifer Burns, University of Virginia history professor and author of Goddess of the Market, Ayn Rand and the American Right. I want to hear what she thought about Ronald Reagan, and then we'll play one more clip of Paul Ryan, and I'll ask you how closely you think anybody can legitimately tie Ryan to Ayn Rand's extremism when assessing his policies. Brain Lehrer on WNYC, stay with us.
When you Americans hear about a daily arts and cultural affairs show from Canada, I know you're thinking hockey and Celine Dion, eh? Well, think again. I'm Gian Gameshi, the host of Q, your daily dose of live music, interviews, and explorations of the latest cultural trends. Join me for Q, weeknights at 10 on 93.9 FM, WNYC.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, as we conclude our conversation on Ayn Rand as an influence on Paul Ryan and the American right in general, with Jennifer Burns, author of Goddess of the Market, Ayn Rand and the American Right. And I should mention that though she was at the University of Virginia when the book came out, Professor Burns is at Stanford now, right?
That's right. I'm in sunny California as we speak.
All right. What do you think of Ronald Reagan?
You know, it's pretty interesting. So Rand published a newsletter throughout her life, and the very last issue of the newsletter before she retired officially was dedicated to denouncing Ronald Reagan. She said, do not support him, do not vote for him. He is the worst kind of conservative because he combines religion and politics and because he was against abortion rights. That was something she felt very strongly was a woman's right to choose, and the fact that Reagan had developed an alliance with Christian conservatives and was pro-life, alarmed her greatly. And so she said, he's a false friend, don't vote for him, and don't support him.
Wow.
Yeah, pretty surprising.
And they are the two who were held up, in a way, as the, you know, the epical figures of conservatism that everybody should aspire to today.
Well, Reagan actually, read Rand's works and enjoyed them. And they overlapped a little bit in Hollywood earlier in their careers in the 1940s when both were active in anti-communist groups in Hollywood. But, that evolution of modern conservatism, that sort of joining of the forces of the more libertarian Ayn Rand set of ideas with social conservative ideas, that was well underway. And that's really what Reagan built his career on. And Ayn Rand saw that happening, and she was deeply opposed to it, so she tried to sound the warning then to her followers.
So here's another clip of Paul Ryan singing the praises of Ayn Rand. This is from 2009, when the financial crisis was at its peak.
You know, it doesn't surprise me that sales of The Fountainhead and Atlas Shrugged have surged lately with the Obama administration coming in, because it's that kind of thinking, that kind of writing that is sorely needed right now. And I think a lot of people would observe that we are right now living in an Ayn Rand novel, metaphorically speaking. But more to the point is this. The issue that is under assault, the attack on democratic capitalism, on individualism and freedom in America, is an attack on the moral foundation of America. And Ayn Rand, more than anyone else, did a fantastic job of explaining the morality of capitalism, the morality of individualism. And this, to me, is what matters most. It is not enough to say that President Obama's taxes are too big or the health care plan doesn't work for this or that policy reason. It is the morality of what is occurring right now and how it offends the morality of individuals working toward their own free will to produce, to achieve, to succeed that is under attack. And it is that what I think Ayn Rand would be commenting on, which we need that kind of comment more and more than ever.
Paul Ryan in 2009. So, Jennifer Burns, you want to comment on the context of that? It's 2009. The banks are failing, or practically, you know, those that survived are kind of on the edge. The Obama stimulus is being enacted. The TARP is being enacted. The health care reform is being proposed. And he's talking about the morality of the individual.
That's right. I mean, it's a very common interpretation of Rand that arose in the wake of the financial crisis. And readers of Rand often looked at the financial crisis and said the problem was too much government regulation. And we had a problem with too much government, and now we're fixing it with more government. This is crazy. How can this be happening? And they would point to Atlas Shrugged, you know, a fictional novel, as an explanation for what was happening in the United States at that time. And what Ryan is really hitting there is it's pure Randianism about the morality of capitalism. You deserve to keep what you earned. You have no obligations to anybody else in the society, and it's not legitimate for the government to tax you or to regulate your economic activity in the service of the greater good. That's just not valid. It's not morally valid, because morality, according to Rand and according to Ryan in this clip, is about the individual and about the individual's right to be free and autonomous. And there are no limits to that.
Is Paul Ryan unusual for how explicit he is in talking publicly about Ayn Rand like that? He also gave copies of Atlas Shrugged to his congressional staff as Christmas presents one year. But is he unusual?
He is unusual. You know, the Republican or conservative affection for Rand was sort of the love that dare not speak its name for many years, because she's such a lightning rod. And I think the Tea Party did a lot to legitimize Rand within the Republican Party, because they were so vocal about their affection for her, and it's become such a powerful segment of the conservative movement. So I think you find politicians more willing to speak up about her because they realize there's a constituency that's going to agree with exactly what they say. But, you know, Ryan is an index of how much Rand has shifted from being a somewhat marginal figure to being really central. And he's by far the most successful politician in decades who's been willing to speak openly about Ayn Rand and what she means to him.
And this year, we should say, Congressman Ryan began to publicly distance himself from Ayn Rand, calling his fascination with her more of a youthful thing than anything current, though he was hardly a kid there in 2009 in that clip. But have you followed his change of tune?
Followed his change of tune, and it's not particularly convincing because of the very recent vintage of those clips that you're playing. I mean, your listeners can see how recent those are. I think it is true that he, you know, is obviously been influenced by Catholicism as well, and kind of blends those two. But, you know, he's not talking about his Catholic beliefs in the same way that he's talking about Ayn Rand until he emerges as a potential national contender and realizes that to be be singing the praises of an atheist is controversial in the national political culture.
So it's more that he wanted to detach himself from Rand's atheism because that was a political liability, rather than deciding her economic views were too extreme.
Yeah, as far as I've seen, everything he's done is simply say, well, the views you attribute to Ayn Rand, those aren't Ayn Rand views. You know, they come from somewhere else. So he has disowned her philosophy in terms of it being too materialistic and not acknowledging religious faith, but he hasn't disowned the policy consequences that flow from Rand's philosophy.
Why do you think a young Paul Ryan, under the spell of Atlas Shrugged and The Fountainhead, would then decide not to start a business, but to spend his entire career in government?
You know, it's pretty interesting. I mean, there's an irony in that quote that Rand inspired him to go into public service because Rand wouldn't even acknowledge public service as a valid concept, right? You know, there's a sort of a fever that Rand can inspire that can make people see this ideal world and want to get to and move to that ideal world. And I think that's the vision that Ryan had. And, you know, his skill set, he's sort of a policy wonk guy. He loves the details of policy. I think that probably made him think, you know, he had the right skill set to work in politics towards this goal. A lot of people are inspired to start businesses, to change careers, to strike out on their own, to do other things by Ayn Rand. And it's interesting that he's remained so attached to her because many politicians, when they get into the political realm, find out that the name of the game is compromise. And Rand did not believe in compromise. So in many ways, she's not an effective guide to a practical politician who wants to get things done.
And I guess, as we conclude, to be fair, just because Ryan holds Rand as a foundational influence doesn't mean he would go as far as her. He's living in the real world of Washington politics, so he may not get out there and try to actually abolish the income tax or some of the other things that she would have espoused.
Yeah, it's interesting. And some of the sort of still hardcore followers of Ayn Rand have been saying, you know, Paul Ryan doesn't actually go far enough. You know, he's not really true to Rand's vision in that way. And I think, you know, Ryan is a politician in a democratic system who seems to understand that, you know, certain things can't be done when you have to, you know, win the votes of people and respect the wishes of your constituents. So it'll be very interesting to see how this plays out. His ideas are still pretty controversial on the national level, and, well, you know, the voting public will be getting an exposure to ideas that are going to, I think, seem pretty bracing and pretty shocking. And whether or not they're ready for that is something we're all going to be watching for.
Well, it's going to be a very interesting few months, as suddenly we are now talking about things including Ayn Rand's economic views and the extent to which Paul Ryan holds them as he publicly praises her. And we thank Jennifer Burns, Stanford University history professor and author of a 2009 biography called Goddess of the Market, Ayn Rand and the American Right. This has been fascinating. Thank you so much.
Yeah, appreciate it.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and in a sort of connective tissue, we are going to speak about the Conference of American Nuns last weekend. American bishops, even though they're in some conflict with the nuns, have denounced Ryan's budget as not meeting Catholic moral standards for dealing with the poor. But the nuns have their own problems with the Vatican, and we're going to talk to the keynote speaker at their conference from last weekend right after this.